We're on a mission to revolutionise how everyday Australians invest in property, and we have proven that it's irrelevant where you live. Where you invest in property is a completely different set of considerations, and our business helps people do that.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're chatting with Simon Presley. He's the owner of Propertology and winner of several awards in the property investor space, revolutionising the way in which ordinary Australians invest in property. Follow his journey from banking to business and discover the surprising research behind the best areas to buy in. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free. With over 35 years of experience in financial services, Presley's passion lies in creating new opportunities for clients to get into the property market.
I'm the managing director of Propertyology. We founded our business under a different name nearly 20 years ago. It was originally following my banking background. So the foundation of the business was mortgage broking and commercial finance. And it's evolved over the years to be really active in helping property investors with a heavy emphasis on market research.
He has also won a number of awards for his services.
Look, we're certainly not in it for awards, but I guess we're all driven for excellence. And I guess, occasionally when you get industry awards, they're a good feeling, not just myself, but the team. It's sort of, recognition from industry peers that we're leaders, we're innovators, and we keep sort of trying to reinvent the world for a better consumer experience. In the early years of our business, I think 2 years there, we won Australia's Mortgage Broker of the Year a couple of times in the early part of the 2000s. Under Propertyology, which is about 10 years old now, 3 consecutive years Australia's Buyer's Agent of the Year. Our business was the first ever non-sales business that won the REIQ Best Small Agency. So a few feathers in the cap.
The name Propertyology came about through Simon's love of economics and commerce.
I love economics. I love commerce and have this innate urge to try to understand the why and how about markets. And so I maintain that there is very much a science to property markets. That said, it's by no means an exact science, but neither is forecasting the weather or share markets or, a doctor can't guarantee us any outcome from treatment either, but there definitely is a science to it. I just thought Propertyology was one simple word that best expressed that.
Simon's day-to-day role involves diligently studying property markets all around Australia, revolutionising how everyday Australians like you and I invest in property.
My role in the business is to study property markets literally all over Australia. What our team does is that it then uses our intellectual property, our market research, to help everyday Australians take advantage of this massive country called Australia. We're on a mission to revolutionise how everyday Australians invest in property, and we have proven that it's irrelevant where you live. Where you invest in property is a completely different set of considerations, and our business helps people do that.
Born in Adelaide, Presley spent his childhood moving around before eventually settling down further north.
My father was in the army, for all of my first 16, 17 years of my life, we moved around quite regularly, as happens in the Defence Force. Born in Adelaide, but have lived in different capital cities and different parts of regional Australia. Obviously not knowing that as a child, but as an adult helping people invest, there's some experiences there that I can draw on. Did my high schooling years in Townsville. My mother and father still live up there. When I started my banking career as a late teenager, I transferred from Townsville to Brisbane. Family man, been in Brisbane now for, well, I don't know, 28 years or something like that. Married with a young son. Love the Brisbane Lions. Outside of property, AFL is my absolute passion, and love economics.
That's awesome, and I can imagine some of the fans out there right now say,
Look, it has been, it's fair to say, it's been a dry spell, but we never forget those wonderful heydays, you know, the year 2000 through to 2004. I am absolutely privileged to have been live at the MCG for the four consecutive grand finals that the Brisbane Lions played in, and of course won three of those.
Falling into banking, determined to be successful and to work hard, he was fascinated by the bigger economic drivers when it came to commercial finance lending.
Sort of learned that I think a lot of people go through high school not really knowing what they want to do career-wise. There are the odd exception, and I was certainly in that bracket. I had no idea a particular career path. I knew I wanted to be successful, and I was determined to work hard. I guess I've always had an interest in helping people, and in high school I was always very good at maths, and I like things trying to understand why. I did fall into banking, yes. Back in the days, used to have the big banks used to come out in sort of about November, December to the high schools and talk about a career in banking, and because I didn't know what I wanted to do, I thought I'd throw my hat in the ring. So I had 10 years with the Commonwealth Bank. I learnt a lot about credit, and whilst it's been a long time since I've worked in the banking sector, you don't lose those skills. And as a property investor, it's very important knowledge to have. So yes, I fell into banking. As I said, I really enjoy helping people. So my role for most of my banking career, Tyron, was I had a commercial finance role. So helping businesses borrow money, and to do that and to do it well, you need to understand not just the business but the industry they're in and the things that affect it, and I love that. Sure, we've got to look at profit and loss statements and balance sheets and that sort of stuff, and that can for some be interesting, but what I always found more interesting is the bigger picture, things that could affect that industry. And whilst not knowing it during my banking career, that's really what's driven me to what I do now, studying property markets.
After 10 years with the Commonwealth Bank, Presley made a career shift.
With the Commonwealth Bank, as I said earlier, I learned a lot, but I was becoming increasingly frustrated going to work each day. And I mean, let's face it, banks are very big, bureaucratic environments. In some ways, there's some similarities to governments, and I just cannot stand bureaucracy and being told day in, day out, oh, that's just the way we do it, when it might have been fine 20 years ago. But, you know, I guess I learned that I had an entrepreneurial side to the way my mind works, and I value common sense, I value efficiency, I value progress, and you just don't get that in big organisations. So, look, I had a couple of years, the last 2 years of my career with the Commonwealth Bank, where I still loved the helping people, but I was just frustrated with that environment. And I don't like victims. I didn't want to become one myself. It just whinges and moans and groans. It's, hey, what am I going to do about it? And I thought, well, the line of work I love, to remove the bureaucracy, let's go and set up my own business doing the same thing. So when the business started nearly 20 years ago, it was commercial finance and mortgage broking, but working for myself rather than a bureaucratic organisation. And over the years, I could see that I was enjoying helping people acquire finance primarily to purchase assets, but I identified that there was a massive hole where the consumer had no expertise that they could had skill and trust to turn to help with the asset selection.
There, he saw a new opportunity for his business where he could help his clients access a broader range of properties from across Australia. Propertology was the first business in the country to do this.
So here I was working hard, you know, to help people with debt structures and getting the money set up right. But that's largely irrelevant if the asset selection was poor. And I could identify that the consumer really had nowhere to go, that if the asset they were looking for was property, all they knew of was the local real estate agent, who's not a market analyst, whose job is to sell features and benefits of a particular property, and has nothing to do with the rest of the country. And I've always liked property, and as I said earlier, I've loved economics. So I sort of thought, well, no one's ever done this or done it well. Maybe that's the opportunity for us.
And it turned out to be a fantastic opportunity because you combine all that macro knowledge that you could actually help others, because not everyone has the time to actually go and do the in-depth research that you do for your clients at this point in time.
That's right. Look, and when we started this journey, you know, Propertyology 10 years ago, there was literally no other business in Australia that could hand on heart say to the everyday investor, look, our profession, every day when we wake up, we study the fundamentals of markets all over Australia. And we can then combine that with a buyer's agency service and help you invest in targeted locations throughout Australia. So there's no organisation that did that. Here and now today, there might be three or four similar type businesses to Propertyology, but it's still a very immature market.
There was another, more personal motive behind the start of Propertyology, with a wish to provide more options for people like his parents, who worked hard but had a tough run.
I didn't realise this until my early 20s, Tyron, but as a child, Mum and Dad did it very tough financially. I said earlier that we travelled around a lot. My father was in the army. And hard-working people, great morals, and I'm certainly thankful that they taught me that. But it wasn't until I entered the workforce and started earning money and having to pay my own way through life, I started to realise that Mum and Dad had made a lot of really poor financial decisions, and I say that with all love. But I didn't know it at the time, but they actually went through bankruptcy when I guess I was about, I don't know, somewhere between the age of 13 and 15. And as responsible parents did, they shielded us from that. I can just remember lots of stressful times and Mum and Dad having lots of discussions with their parents and children told to play outside and replacing cars regularly and that sort of stuff. I didn't know what was going on, but I figured out for myself in my early 20s what actually happened, and that made me sad. When I thought about Mum and Dad aren't silly and they work hard and, you know, they earn average incomes, and then I thought about everyone else in my life that I knew that were of that generation, aunties and uncles and Mum and Dad's friends and even their parents. And I couldn't think of a single person who was really financially comfortable and could say, look, when they stop working in the not-too-distant future, they're going to be able to really enjoy everything they wanted. I couldn't think of a single person that I personally knew. Now, this is just not right. We are the lucky country, apparently. It's not a third-world country. I thought, this is just not right. Bearing in mind, I'm in my early 20s and the early stages of my banking career, and I'm helping people arrange loans as I'm, you know, having this flashback of my childhood and all the adults that I knew. So I thought that that's sad, and I thought it's crazy that the country hadn't done anything about that and how that could evolve, and my natural urge to, you know, an enjoyment for helping people, I thought that's important. Let's do something about that.
This influenced Presley to begin investing in property himself as well.
The age pension doesn't provide much of a lifestyle for anybody. The rules around it keep changing and the value of it keeps diminishing, and that will continue forever and a day in an ageing population. So that's what got me into investing. With the raw feelings of what my mum and dad went through, I was determined that when I got married, when I started a family, that would not be me. And the only way to ensure that was to be responsible with my money and to invest, not to rely on an age pension. And if you break it all down, the average person spends 20 years of their life initially learning stuff, sets us up for whatever career path we take. If we say that the generally accepted retirement age is 65, that means that the average person has 45 years earning in the workforce. How much time do we really need to set ourselves up? I'm not talking about, you know, everyone wanting to be billionaires, just using 45 years in the workforce, making sensible, responsible decisions so that when we get to age 60, 65, whatever it is, that the rest of our life, and we're now, you know, living to age 90 on average, the rest of our life, we don't have to struggle. Only person who can control that is the individual. Schools don't teach financial literacy. Employers don't teach it. Governments don't teach it. But we, as an individual, we need to learn it's important. So that's I bought my first property, obviously the family home, at age 21, which is probably younger than most. We've heard a lot recently about housing affordability crisis and that sort of stuff, which is completely laughable in my opinion, because I remember the sacrifices I had to make and how hard it was to get my deposit together to buy my first house 26 years ago. It's always been hard. And interest rates were probably about 12% back then, not the 4.5% that we get these days. It's always been hard. But, you know, if it's important enough, we'll find a way, no matter what it is in life.
Coming up after the break, Simon will talk about his worst investing moment.
But I bought an emotion. I had a long weekend at the Sunshine Coast, and I thought, this place is beautiful. And so I just bought a very basic two-bedroom apartment, literally on the Esplanade. So across the road literally was the beach, so the view could never be built out.
What he did to uncover the best places to invest in Australia?
When we looked at the best performed, we saw a majority of the names were not the high-profile locations that you and I and everyone would probably expect to be at the top. They weren't the Sydneys and Melbournes.
And that's next. I'm Taran Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Hey, podcast listeners. I just wanted to let you know about the podcast show notes I've created for you that you can download at freepropertyresource.com. Inside these show notes, I've included a full summary, details of the resources recommended, plus much, much more. Just go to freepropertyresource.com to grab it now. It's free, and it'll make the rest of the episode so much more impactful. Again, that's freepropertyresource.com. Now back to the show. After buying his first family home, Presley took the next steps by purchasing his first investment property in the same area.
Yes, as I said, I was always determined to take control of my own financial future. So I can't remember the exact year, but sometime after buying my first family home and accumulate a little bit of equity through a combination of what, you know, my own home market had done and also, you know, just responsible paying down debt, I decided it was time to invest. I love laughing at myself looking back because, you know, no one knows what you don't know. But back then, I think I was in my late 20s, I guess 27 or something like that. The first investment property was probably 5 kilometres from my existing family home. And I went through the same process as I did to buy the investment properties with the family home. You know, looking well, newspapers back then, now it's all online, but, you know, what's the sale and trying to really, if I'm honest, pretend that you know the market, but what I actually knew was the neighbourhood. And look, here and now today, nothing's changed. You know, 25 million Australians and those in their adult ages, most people say they know their market. They don't. They know their neighbourhood. They know where the schools are and the shopping centres are and the busy roads, but that's the neighbourhood, their features and benefits. It's not the market. But I didn't know that either. As I said, it's laughable, but it's good because here and now today, when I'm helping others invest, I can relate to you know, what people are thinking and why they're influenced that way. So, yeah, creature of habit, like everyone else, bought that investment property. Proud as punch I was of all the research I thought I'd done. but lucky, you know, to be honest, I bought it at a time, you know, the early part of this century when most Australian locations just did exceptionally well for some years, sort of after the Sydney Olympic Games. So the first investment experience was a good one, but a complete fluke.
One of Presley's biggest learning curves was a purchase in Queensland that didn't go according to plan.
I haven't had any major tragedies, but you know, anyone who says that everything went according to what I expected is clearly lying, because no one's got a crystal ball, including Simon Presley, who studies property every single day for a living. None of us do. But I can recall, I think it was my second investment property. I recently sold it, actually, but a place called Caloundra on the Sunshine Coast. Yeah, and that's why I bought it. But not knowing at the time, I thought it was research, but all it was emotion. I had a long weekend at the Sunshine Coast, and I thought, this place is beautiful. And so I just bought a very basic two-bedroom apartment, literally on the Esplanade. So across the road literally was the beach, so the view could never be built out. It was, you know, 240-degree view. I think I paid very low $200,000 for this place, and proud as punch thinking I've done all this research. But I bought an emotion at the end of the day. Water doesn't make properties grow, it makes plants grow. But I thought I can see the growth. I see the emotion. But look, at the end of the day, Australia, these are the things you learn after the event. So my research and rationale for buying this property was that water views couldn't be built out, licensed to print money. But then, you know, and it did okay for some years, don't get me wrong. But then when the GFC hit, that property dropped by about 35% over about 2 years. I tried to sell it at one point. I couldn't give it away. And then I already several years had obviously evolved. So I already knew that on reflection, the research was nowhere near as sophisticated as what I first thought. But then I thought, sometimes people need to actually experience something like that to really question what they thought they did know. And if you think of Australia, it is an island, a damn big one, but Australia is an island. So there are dozens of towns and cities that are surrounded by water. So if water was this magic ingredient for prices to grow, then every year, every location on water would boom, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's what we'd all think, and we'd be all millionaires and rich right now. But
that's right. But has it? No, it never has, never will. So the reason my property declined by about 35% in a very short period of time is because the Sunshine Coast is heavily reliant on tourism. And when you come out of a GFC, any household expense that's a discretionary item, people stop doing. So, you know, holidays is the first thing you give away. So economies that rely heavily on that, including the Sunshine Coast, suffered because, you know, jobs are lost, wages fall, confidence is low, people don't buy houses, they don't renovate, you know, they sell, they relocate, all the opposite of what you want to happen. But it was actually that experience and a few other things, Tyron, that made me realise property is all about economics.
Eventually, he sold the Caloundra property. However, not before taking away a valuable lesson.
And certainly, I didn't lose money on it. As I said, it did decline in value significantly, but I wasn't a situation where I had to sell or anything like that. It was just a big wake up call as to, you know, what is research and what are the real things that affect the value of an asset, as opposed to the things that I thought were more important. It was a really good experience to have, and sometimes the best learnings in life are experience. I mean, they're called mistakes for a reason, because you don't mean for it to happen, but we all make mistakes. The key is when you're in that moment, oh shit, what do I do, is to pause and reflect upon the decision that you made however long ago to get yourself in that position. The best learnings, better than what you can get out of a textbook. I eventually sold it, combination, because I knew that with the capital I could get out of that property, I could do better in other parts of Australia. But also, I bought that property with some friends, which was a good experience. But I was wanting to renovate the property, and they didn't want to renovate the property. No arguments there at all, but I just sort of thought, perhaps we just need to get our money out of that and go our separate ways.
Presley's biggest aha moment came when he and the Propertology team were able to pinpoint the potential growth in specific locations throughout Australia.
We're the only firm in Australia that picked Hobart's boom several years back. I'd like to come back to that. But the biggest aha moment was several years ago now, probably 5 years ago. We did a study that took several months. It involved breaking Australia down into the 550 individual local governments that are spread across our 8 states and territories. So we got the official data of these 550 LGAs that we call it, which is the equivalent of the Property Investors Stock Exchange, if you like. And that's how we view property, is every one of those 550 local councils is the equivalent of a company on the stock exchange. So we sort of thought, I'll pay in tens and tens of thousands of dollars to a big company called CoreLogic. And all that gives you is a massive file with billions and billions of cells of data. So that's obviously costly, but the bigger cost than that is the hundreds and hundreds of hours that we spent creating all sorts of formulas and different spreadsheets and charts and analysing it. And why we did it, Tyron, was so we thought, you know, the property world has always been full of all these myths and theories, and investing in property is it's a big decision. It's a lot of money. No one's ever going to be able to give us a guarantee. But what if we actually put all these theories to the test? What if we got all the evidence and devoted whatever time and resources was required to test all these things? So we thought, well, the place to, you got to get all the historical data. So we got all that data for 550 LGAs, and we took it back to the turn of the century, 1st of January 2000. And we then, for each of these 550 LGAs, we worked out the average annual capital growth rate for 550 locations over that period of time. So it was two full property cycles, a long period of time. We then got the average rental yield for each of those 550 LGAs, and we added them together to give a total return on investment over that long period of time. And we then literally filtered it and ranked them from best performed to worst performed.
Then they studied the outcome of this research and started to question why.
When we looked at the best performed, we saw a majority of the names were not the high-profile locations that you and I and everyone would probably expect to be at the top. They weren't the Sydneys and Melbournes. They were predominantly regional locations that we'd all heard of, but they certainly weren't the really big cities with large population masses. And then when we looked down the bottom 10-20%, we actually saw the locations that we thought would be at the top. So to quote some facts, so Greater Sydney is made up of 43 LGAs, and zero of those 43 LGAs appeared in the top 40% in Australia over that massive period of time. Zero.
That's very surprising, actually. Okay.
Australia's second biggest city is Melbourne, obviously, which is made up of 31 LGAs. And 27 out of 31 also appeared in the bottom 40%. So let me first say that every location in Australia over this massive period of time experienced significant growth. And every location had periods of booms and flat periods and even periods of a couple of years of decline. But when you're talking about stretching it out over the journey, what the evidence taught us was affordability was a common denominator amongst the better performed locations. Directly explains why Australia's two biggest cities were in the bottom 40% and not in the top 10 or 20 that before doing the study we would have expected to occur. The regional locations, well, all regional locations are more affordable than capital cities, but it's not just a matter of buying a region because it's cheaper, because there are also plenty of regional locations that were, you know, in the bottom half, not the top half. So when we looked at what also is common, it was economic development. So there were periods throughout the journey where certain industries did well, different regional locations throughout Australia benefited from businesses expanding or infrastructure projects or job growth in general. So that gave us the proof that it's in this game of investing, the most valuable information is, we're still forecasting, but is to try to anticipate which industries are going to perform the best in the future, which ones are likely to expand and create jobs and wage growth and confidence and that sort of stuff. And then every location in Australia, capital city and non-capital city, what is their economic profile?
So, inspired by Simon Presley's story and his amazing aha moments, we'll continue the conversation in a future episode on Property Investory, where we'll find out his go-to resources for gaining financial literacy.
Good to Great is a good business book. The E-Myth is a great, you know, really basic business book. I don't mind reading. They're not property related, they're not financial related, but I don't mind reading autobiographies just by successful people in general, and I love sport. So
his success habits for property investing?
Lots of hard work, perseverance, don't take things for granted, challenge the status quo.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory. Also, if you haven't subscribed to receive your free property case studies that I only send exclusively via email, you can text me your email address to 0499881040 to subscribe. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, the strategies, and much more. Simply text me your email address to 0499881040 to get your free case studies. Thanks for listening.